It is July 3rd, 2010. This is Candace Ellis here with
Pat Risberg.
And today we continue our talks about living in the Panama Canal Zone. It'll probably be best to start from the beginning, how your family found themselves in the zone. And
All right. We sailed on the SS Cristobal from New York, September 1940. My mother, my younger sister, and myself. And we lived in Queens, New York, so we simply got on the subway and got to the pier. My father sailed earlier in the year on a United Fruit ship with his father and three brothers looking for employment in the canal and in land clearing and construction work. And because he was successful, we were able to come down on the SS Cristobal, which was the canal ship at the time. My mother, who was quite young at the time, thought she had died and gone to heaven on that six-day voyage with no cooking, no cleaning, nothing to do but sit on deck and make new friends. And they played bingo and they played the horses. And then we just listened for the, what we called the ding-ding-dong of the bellboy calling us all to meals all the time. And we just, it was a beautiful dining room. The food was scrumptious. Baked Alaska was her favorite thing. She loved that idea forever. So I was 7 years old. My sister was 1 year old. My grandfather and his two brothers were employed by the Isthmian Canal Commission back during the construction days. So the family had a history down there. And they left after the construction of the canal and went back to New York. But all that is documented in the Rite of Passage book that the museum published last year. So I didn't go in any further into that details of that. That's already a matter of record. But when we got to Panama, there was no government housing available. So my father had found a little duplex in Colon on 3rd Street. And we set up housekeeping there. Living in Colon had some problems. We had no car. Had to take a taxi to go to the commissary to get groceries. The little duplex was broken into two times while we lived there by local maleantes. And one time they actually crawled in a window by my bed when I was sleeping in the bed. And they stepped down on the bed to get to the floor. However, they really weren't looking for anything other than food or money. And the first time this happened, the thief went into the kitchen, took a ham out of the icebox, and made himself a sandwich, and took a carving knife and went next door and left the carving knife next door. I mean, that was the extent of the problem. The other time the fella came in, and he took my father's pants and took all the loose change out of the pants and hung the pants on the gate in the outside the house. And that was the extent of that. I mean, these were not serious crimes by any means, but it was a little uncomfortable for us. The other problem was that the insects and the insect bites for the kids. And my younger sister, in particular, had bandages around her legs all the time. They would get infected. And anyway, my mother put up with it for a couple months, and then she finally declared she was sick of tropical living. So we were booked on the Cristobal again to go back. My mother and my sister and I, again, but not with my father. He was not leaving. He was a person of the Depression in New York, and he had a job, and he wasn't going to leave that job there. He thought it was secure and permanent, and he was pretty happy. So there was a little conflict going on then. Of course, I was too young to realize how serious the conflict was. But at the very last minute, we didn't go. And then shortly thereafter, we got a refrigerator and a radio console. I think it came from Sears, but I think that was a bribe. And that was it. We lived there for a year. Then we moved to Gatun on High Street into government housing. Mm-hmm. And then we lived in a 12-family apartment building. And on that street, there were 6 12-family apartment buildings. Mm-hmm. So we and 71 other families lived on that street. And the 12 families were built one story up and then 2 stories above that. Mm-hmm. But underneath was nothing but loose dirt. And we kids played in the loose dirt under those houses. And impetigo and ringworm, again, you know, it was there. You just had to deal with it. So that was a local problem. It's mm-hmm. a tropical problem. We had lots and lots of kids on that street. The favorite thing to do was to play in this huge ditch that ran down the back of the street. And during the rainy season, the water really came rushing down there. Moved rocks, moved dirt, moved everything down there. It was a very dangerous place for kids to play. Mm-hmm. But my little sister by then was 2, and she just loved playing in that ditch. So I used to fish her out every chance I got, but she could get in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
But another thing that was going on while we lived there was that they were building the 3rd set of locks up at the end of the street, and the construction vehicles were up and down all the time. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking of this street with so many kids and these construction vehicles. And there was an observation platform up there so that the officials could come and overlook and see what was going on in the construction. And at the time we lived there, it was a huge, huge excavation there. Many levels, you know, they'd go down like, they'd go down partway and then they'd start a new level. And it was a very dangerous place. With all the kids yeah. around there. There were no fences, mm-hmm. so it was open access if the kids especially wanted to go up there and explore, mm-hmm. like kids do. So fortunately, I don't remember any accidents. I really don't.
That's incredible.
Yeah, mm-hmm. when I think of it now. Mm-hmm. On the funny side, those apartments were not fancy construction, but they had the strongest toilets you have ever imagined. I mean, when they flushed in one apartment, all 12 apartments heard it.
You can hear it, yeah.
And got woke up in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And when my little sister had the opportunity, she would sit in that toilet and keep flushing it so the water would rush over her legs. She just thought that was the funniest thing you've ever seen. And it was. I mean, it was horrifying, but that's mm-hmm. what happened. Also, there was a train that roared through that intersection early in the morning and several other times a day. And as a result, there were a lot of babies born mm-hmm. during the time that people lived on High Street, including one in my own family. My mother had another baby born. Mm-hmm. But there was no air conditioning. There were no windows. There was screens mm-hmm. on the front room. Unless you had an end apartment. If you were lucky enough to have an apartment on the end, you had some windows on the sides. But yeah. otherwise, they were furnished with quartermaster furniture. Mm-hmm. It was what I call no-frills living, you know. Mm-hmm. Furniture was horrible. Metal bureaus and 3 wicker chairs. And that was about as good as it got.
Mm-hmm.
But we were living there on December 7th, 1941. Mm. And there was an immediate blackout the minute the word came across that the Japs had bombed Pearl Harbor. And I remember sitting in the front room with my father in the dark and waiting for them to bomb the canal.
Mm.
And we lived 2 miles from the locks, you know, which would have been target zero. And that was the thinking. And later on, many, many years later on, we were vacationing in Hawaii was my husband and I. And we went to a museum, and there was a display on the Pearl Harbor attack. And there was an actual newspaper there that says the Japs plan to bomb the Panama Canal next. So it was an actual thought that was going on at the time.
A lot of fear during
that. A lot of fear, yes. Mm-hmm. People were very worried. Fortunately, that never happened. Mm-hmm. Although we did live with black paper over the screens in that 12 family for the 2 years we lived there. Mm-hmm. And after that, we moved to another house, to a duplex. And I call that typical Canal Zone lifestyle because your housing was awarded on the basis of your seniority. Mm-hmm. So the years of service you had with the canal, the more you were able to get a little better housing. And the duplex on Lighthouse Road in Gatun was so much nicer. Oh, it was really nice. But I went to Gatun Elementary, which was a small, charming school. Five rooms, mm-hmm. five classrooms mm-hmm. for six grades in kindergarten. So we had a lot of, I went through all double classes, you know. I went to third grade, and the other side of the room was fourth grade, right. and fourth grade, fifth grade, mm-hmm. like that. But it didn't seem to bother us. By 1944, there were rumors of German subs outside the breakwater. So this time, my mother and I, with my sister and brother, flew back to Miami. And the interesting thing is that we went on what they called the China Clipper seaplane. Mm-hmm. And we took off out of Folks River in Kulon, which was a horrible little place to be. It was between all the shanties mm-hmm. of all the really, really, really poor people. But mm-hmm. it was on the side of the bay, and there was water there for the plane to land. It took 12 hours to get from Panama to Miami. Mm-hmm. And with the one-year-old little brother, it was a miserable trip.
Oh, my gosh.
It was miserable. Mm-hmm. But we did spend the next year in New York, mm-hmm. and it was still wartime. After VE Day, we returned mm-hmm. and began, as I say, the never-ending moving from house to house with the increased seniority afforded by my father's mm-hmm. service. I think I moved 25 times while I lived down there.
Wow.
Between my own family and then when I got married.
Wow.
We started all over again. You know, young people started all over again.
What was it like the year in New York after having...
During the war? Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. We had rationing mm-hmm. and rationing on sugar and
oh yeah
shoes mm-hmm. and all mm-hmm. the usual things. My mother was a smoker. Cigarettes were very hard to come mm-hmm. by. It would have been a good time for her to quit, but she didn't. It was just, that part was tough. A lot of shortages.
Yeah.
And
was it difficult leaving the zone for a year?
I guess I was 12. I didn't have any choice.
Right.
You know, I just mm-hmm. went where we went. Mm-hmm. We rented an apartment, and which was lucky because apartments were hard to get during that time. Mm-hmm. And I went to an old school, but was actually a good student because our Canal Zone schools were very mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yes.
So I am, that's something I always appreciated. But this is my favorite. After VJ Day, mm-hmm. all the battleships were returning from the Pacific, and they'd come through the Gatun locks where we lived, and we would stand on the side of the locks and wave, you know, to all the sailors on the ships, and they were so enthusiastic and so young, and mm-hmm. and we'd stand down there and wave, mm-hmm. and then, I mean, it was exciting, it was thrilling, and it was a joy. It mm-hmm. was a joy just to be part of that. And I was old enough then to appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But the sailors would stand up there and point and say, "This is for you," you know. And they'd throw their hats. Mm-hmm. Well, that day I got four hats, so that was really a good day. But that was such a happy time. I always remember that. After that, I lived in the zone for another 36 years, got through school, marrying, parenting, working, till we retired under what I call the advantageous conditions of the U.S.-Panama Canal Treaty.
Mm-hmm.
Very. And those years were similar for all of us. I mean, I appreciated our schools back in the 40s when I was in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated them again in the 60s and 70s when my girls were in them. Our Cristobal High School was a small school, but we had sports, we had dramatics, we had music, journalism, many clubs, student government, we had girls' state. Mm-hmm. I think it was comparable to a school in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved it. I was a good student, enjoyed class committees, you know, busy beaver, and activities, and was a cheerleader and a homecoming queen, and
homecoming
student association secretary and co-editor of the school and the paper and the yearbook.
Wow.
So I loved the school and the friends.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends today are still my friends from there, from those days. So I was still very thankful.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that grew up down there and was able to raise their kids down there are extremely grateful. It was a great place. And I can't imagine what my life would have been like if I'd stayed in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been totally different, because it's hard to describe the life there, but it was all very even. Everybody worked for the canal.
Right.
Everybody, nobody made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the salaries that kept us there. The climate was easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, average 80s. No cold, a lot of rain, but we survived so well, so mm-hmm. well. So, one of the things that were suggested on the list was talking about hobbies.
Yeah.
And the biggest hobby that I was ever involved in was after I was a parent and we had two daughters, and they begged for horses. And there was a little stables at Gatun. We had about 12, 15 horses up there. And we were able to board the horses at the stables, which was pretty close to the house. They could have walked, but they were used to being driven. But mm-hmm. it was that close, is my point is. So in addition to taking care of the animals, we had horse shows. And we had quite a few stables on all around the canal, probably 6 or 7. And we spent every weekend at horse shows or working with the horses. And it was a very popular hobby, and everybody was so glad to have their kids in something that they loved and were busy and happy, and they do. And in fact, my daughter Lori, who got her first horse when she was about 7 or 8, had horses all the time down there. And now she lives here in Florida, in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a property with horses. And her best friend to this day is her buddy from Gatun Stable, Susie, who also has horses. So it's just an example of how the canal zone life, you know, transferred to them when they moved to the States.
The States, right.
It was that kind of a love of what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is they're buying the hay now. I got out of that. Of course, we had help.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a Jamaican. We called them maids. Mm-hmm. Our Jamaican maid was Carmen. And she took good care of our children and our house. I had to go to work when we got the horses.
Yeah.
So, but one of my daughter's memories is coming home from school and finding Carmen crying. And Carmen told her that the President Kennedy had been shot and killed. Mm-hmm. And the sadness on the part of Carmen was just like any American. That's mm-hmm. how loyal they were to us all. And what a mm-hmm. good relationship we had with our help. So that was another event that we all remembered.
Mm-hmm.
But they also asked about your working experience. So after I graduated from high school, I got married.
Mm-hmm.
And I did intend to find a job with the canal, but I couldn't find one. I just couldn't find one on the Atlantic side. So instead, I had children. And 10 years later, the Canal Zone merit system was implemented, which is more like a civil service system, but it was called the Canal Zone merit system. You took tests, you scored high, or somewhere on there, you got a job. So I took a clerk stenographer test. I was hired within weeks. And first by the Army with the counterinsurgency unit for the Army at Fort Bullock. And this was during the Bay of Pigs era. Right. So counterinsurgency and the Bay of Pigs and all that was going on around that time. Mm-hmm. So then that was my first job. That was typing military manuscripts in Spanish. Luckily, I knew enough Spanish to get through it. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't a very exciting job. Then I transferred to the canal, to the what we call the Motor Transportation Division. Well, I was only there a month when another job came up at the grade 3 level, which is what I was in all the jobs, those jobs. But it's interesting, and this is a little different concept. The next job I got was a grade 3 security job. But if it was a security job, you had to be a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. And then your pay doubled. So it was pretty quick that I got into a better paying job. Mm-hmm. So I stayed there. This was the local shipyard, the ship repair yard. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for a couple of years. Got several promotions, and then the Personnel Bureau opened an office on the Atlantic side. We never had one on the Atlantic side before. It was only on the Pacific. So then I transferred to the Personnel Bureau as a personnel staffing specialist and spent 2 years there. So that was good experience. Then I transferred back to my industrial division and as the administrative officer because the incumbent retired. So that was great. It was great. It was great to be a boss, you know, because I supervised the office, secretary pool. I even supervised the guard force and I could even write job descriptions for machinists and boilermakers and pipe fitters and all the crafts. Mm-hmm. So that was great. Was there. So by this time I was in a grade 9. Mm-hmm. But after that we moved to the Pacific side all the way from Gatun to Balboa.
What was that transition like?
My husband's got transferred. I had no choice in the matter. I had to go. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you the truth, it was traumatic because I had to leave my job and our friends and stables, of course, the kids' stables, and our little hometown of Gatun, where I grew up and where we had been living in all this time. So my daughters were then Canal Zone College at ninth grade level. Now, the ninth grader was devastated. Mm. It's 50 miles. Doesn't seem that bad, but it was a whole different life. Mm-hmm. I didn't think she'd ever get over it. But I was lucky. I got a job with the maintenance division on the Pacific side, same level that I was on the Atlantic side. So that part worked out. And eventually we all adjusted and were very happy with the move. It was bigger town, bigger, closer to Panama City where they had nice restaurants and nice things to do. And eventually we bought a place up at one of the beaches, which was up the coast, Pacific coast of Panama. They had several beach communities up there. And we bought a cute little house and we put in a stables and we put in a pool. And it was over 2 acres, all in nice green grass and flowering trees, yellow trees, pink trees. It was just beautiful.
Must have been beautiful.
It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And we went up there for weekends. And even a vacation, if we got a week off from work or two, we'd go up there. So, and the kids loved it. My daughter had a mini bike. So we'd take the mini bike up there so she could travel around these little roads. And she always had a friend. Mm-hmm. And they rode double on the mini bike all around these little country roads. And then sometimes we bring the horses up there, but not all the time. That was more of a trouble. But that was a really good time. It brings us about up to the treaty and the riffing.
Yes.
Next big event, 1979. I was riffed. By then, I was the administrative officer in the Engineering Construction Bureau. Mm-hmm. And I was riffed to the Equal Opportunity Office as an investigator. Now, I had been an equal opportunity counselor as a, you know, in addition to your other duties before that. So that's why I was qualified to be an equal opportunity investigator. Right. As it turned out, I mean, I was very upset about the RIF, but it turned out to be one of my best jobs ever. Mm. I really liked being an investigator. Mm-hmm. So much freedom of movement. You had access to any records and personnel, you know, with your cases. You had to research the case if people came to you with the complaints. Mm-hmm. And you had access to all the records. I was out of the office three-fourths of the time, out running around doing this business. And it was so much freedom, and I wasn't tied down to an office like I always had been. Mm-hmm. But my point is that some good came out of it. I was pretty happy. That was the last 2 years we were there. Now, during this time, my husband, Bud Risberg, was chief of the engineering division and was on the boundaries committee for the treaty. The committee had a real tough job. They were negotiating with the Panamanian people about boundaries and streets and utilities, and both sides striving to retain what they could to control. Mm-hmm. The Panamanians wanted to take everything over right away, but it wasn't going to work like that. It was going to take time. But it was a real tough task, in addition to what he was doing in the engineering division. Mm-hmm. So 2 years was enough, and then we were both able to retire in 1981. So I had lived in the Canal Zone for 41 years, and I was ready for a new life in the States. Mm-hmm. The time leading up to the treaty was very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable, very threatening. Nobody ever knew exactly what was going to happen to your jobs. Right. And if you stayed, what would happen to you, and what the conditions would be. But I think it was a state of mind, and it made those of us that did decide to leave very happy. Mm-hmm. Not everybody left. Some people stayed and worked longer until they could retire. It depended on your eligibility. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and I have a cousin who is still down there.
Wow.
He retired as a tugboat captain, but he just loves it down there, and he has stayed down there. Mm-hmm. And so that's, some people stayed there and loved it. Still loved it. It's still a good place to live, I think. Mm-hmm. But we chose Titusville, Florida, for our retirement home on the Space Coast. And I thought, I think we just felt we'd be happy living close to this Kennedy Space Center and the world-famous Space Center and the shuttle program. And it just felt right that we'd be living a part of the equally famous, after being all those years with the Panama Canal,
yeah.
It felt like we really wanted to live close to something else that was equally important. Mm-hmm. And it's been fine. We've been retired since 1981. So that means 29 years. And that's been a pleasure, too. A pleasure, too.
Have you stayed in the same house? No more moving?
Yes, I have not moved in 29 years.
Settled in, right?
Yes, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. I was cured of moving.
Yeah, and you were looking forward almost to leaving the Panama Canal Zone and coming and settling and retiring, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we also had a daughter. Actually, it was my husband's daughter who was having a new baby. And just wanted to be closer. Typical.
Yeah.
Even though they live in Texas, and they still live in Texas. Oh. Today, she's a gastroenterologist.
Wow.
But the baby was one reason we were ready to leave. And also the job. My husband's job had gotten pretty traumatic.
Mm-hmm. I've only got a few questions. You're pretty thorough with that. That was great. Thank you so much.
Well, I think, is this in the
group? Oh, no, but I can't.
No, it's off.
Oh, it's running.
Oh, it's still running. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's perfect. And that's fine. You know, it's very relaxed at the department.
Yeah.
You know, it's not formal or anything.
No, but it's true. There were. It's a period where there were a lot of world events, you know, like the World War and the assassination of President Kennedy, and they all impacted different ways on all our lives.
In Panama.
Mm-hmm.
What about things like, because that's a point of interest for us, how stateside and even international politics were affecting that area, just as far as events going on in the U.S., say the Civil Rights Movement of 1964, and there was, it seems like there was a lot more hatred and a lot more racism stateside than there was in the Canal Zone. The Canal Zone seems harmonious and, you know, a lot friendlier. What were your impressions of that?
Well, we had changes there, but we entered into life down there in two separate systems.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll hear about that from everybody, I'm sure. There was the gold roll, which was the U.S., and the silver roll, which was the locals, which were mostly Jamaican, mostly the local Jamaicans that came there to build the canal and their descendants. And everything was separate, separate pay standards, separate bathrooms, separate trains. You know, if you went on the train, there was trains in the back for the silver people, the local. And when I talk about it now, it still, it makes me uncomfortable to think of how we lived and accepted it. We had separate commissaries, separate movie theaters, separate everything. And separate town sites, and those, and separate schools. They never were integrated. Never were. The whole time we were there, never were. There was less class, less distinction in the workplace eventually.
Right.
And the lines at the post office were separate, and eventually that was eliminated. And I appreciated the civil rights movement, but when I went in to be the equal employment investigator, we adopted all those principles of the new legislation. That was implemented to prevent discrimination. And in the States, you know, they had color and religion and all the factors. In addition, we had citizenship, and they could file a complaint on the basis of citizenship down there, which complicated it even further, because the federal statutes did not allow for a citizenship claim, because it was never considered. Everybody in the States is a U.S. citizen. So that impacted, and there were cases. I did investigate a lot of those cases. And that's a different story.
And what was it like interacting with the Panamanian people?
Fine,
yeah.
Especially in the early years when we lived on the Atlantic side. And there was two classes of Panamanians. You know, there were the rich white ones that were the lawyers and the doctors and came from Spain or had lived there. Panama was a young country, you know, just barely started in the 1900s. So it's a very young country. And the richer class lived well, spoke well, intelligent, educated. And then all the lower class, there was a lot of poor people, but they all spoke English. We didn't even have to learn to speak Spanish. Did not. In later years, I did, in the workplace. But during those years, no. We had no problems, really. I can't think of any. any single problem until all the hostility developed because of the treaty.
Right.
When they started the treaty.
You know, there was a 1964 riot.
Yes.
And that got a bit...
And the riot.
Yeah.
Yeah, the riots in 64. See, they were in Balboa.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived on the other side.
Yeah.
And so we weren't that involved. But yes, the hostilities had been developing then about... putting the flag up and down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They wanted us out of there in the worst way. So that's when it got a little less comfortable.
A little tense, yeah.
Yeah, a little tense.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, the students in Panama riot over everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even things in their own country would provoke them to riot. So it didn't take much to get them started. Not much at all. So we were kind of blasé about the students rioting, and that's what it was. It was just the students.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they were fighting for, to this day, I don't really remember, other than they wanted the canal. They didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And in all honesty, I think they've done very well.
They've done well.
Mm-hmm. I think they've done very well. As I said, my husband was the chief of the engineering division, and it was all the canal's engineers and architects. And he recommended a Panamanian fellow as his successor when he retired.
Mm-hmm.
And he did get the job, but that was his favorite, his recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
So good people, you appreciate good people no matter what they are, who they are, where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hadn't thought of that before, but that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So that went well.
Yeah. Have you gone back since?
Just once.
Okay.
Just once.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband's son was still working down there. So we were back in 83, the second year after we retired.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. It was still good. It was fun. We stayed with his son and his wife, and they had a new young baby. So that was a good reason to go back and see the baby. And since then, I haven't had a desire to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And then people that go and come back have wonderful vacations.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. And I know the country has developed so much. And the resorts are just gorgeous.
Yeah.
And we never had anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Back to when we had the beach house, we carried every item of food or drink to the beach house because there was no place to buy anything.
Right.
No place. They had no supermarkets, no stores. You could buy ice. That was the only thing you could buy was ice, which was helpful.
Yeah.
But otherwise, those trips were...
Was it a long drive to get up there?
It was 70 miles.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you just had to be self-sufficient.
Right.
Up there, especially
playing for the weekend. Yeah.
Or the week or a weekend. Mm-hmm. But now it's... I guess just
built up
and beautiful resorts and beautiful hotels. And it sounds nice. By hearsay, I understand driving in Panama City is something that you don't want to do.
Oh, I'd be.
Oh,
I
it was always
imagine.
Bad. It was always bad.
Mm-hmm.
Little narrow streets, old streets, some new ones, but the basic part of the city was small streets and lots of traffic. Lots and lots of traffic.
I wouldn't want to do it.
No. Even people that live down there for years come back and say if they go into Panama City for anything, they take a taxi.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. You might hear anything about the, quote, Cayuga races.
Yeah.
Have you been hearing about that?
Yes. Yes.
Well, my daughter's husband has gotten involved and gone down the past 2 years and participated in them. And that's the first time he's been back since they left back when we did.
In 81.
But just has the best time. Has the best time.
It seems like an incredible experience.
Yeah. Paddle, paddle, paddle.
Yeah. For 3 days, I think it said. I was told about 3 days it takes them. 3-4 days to do the entire...
Yeah, they do it over 3 days, over a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Partway Friday. And then they haul the boats out, and then Saturday, and then they haul the boats out. They haul them in and out every day.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they don't let them go through the locks anymore.
No.
They used to, when, this started back in the 60s, before the 60s. I knew the date, now I don't. But they used to let them actually paddle through the canal, through the locks.
It's dangerous.
Through two sets of locks. Yeah. Well, with no ships, you know, they'd kind of pick
a
time.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. They had to paddle fast and get in and out of the locks. But I understand they don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And they take them in and out at the end of the canal to get them out. And then they move them around, tow them around the locks and put them back in. But this year they told my son-in-law, he said that they might stop it because it's just getting to be too big a distraction.
I bet so many people come to do it and they have to shut the canal down. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they used to always, it was Sea Scouts. That's who started it.
Right.
And they had little, one of my daughters was a queen for one of the boats. Mm. And that was a little honor. And so that was a sideline. It wasn't a school activity, but it was a Sea Scout activity. Yeah. That's how it started, just with the kids.
Yeah.
Now
we have
all these 50-year-olds out there killing themselves.
That's a long paddle, 3-day paddle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And my son-in-law's boat lost one of their four persons the first day to an injury. So they had to do it with just three people. So they worked really hard.
Yeah.
He came home, I don't think he could move for days.
Yeah, you'd be so
sore. But
you'll
go back next year. He's already talking about going back next year. So.
That's good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm done if you are.
Yeah. Sure. Let's see.